Meeting for February 1st, 2007 of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. First thing on the agenda, the people, our members had the chance to review the minutes. Anybody want to move the minutes? Representative Olin? Representative Olin moves the minutes for January 25th, 2007. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Minutes have been adopted. Today we're going to be hearing presentations on the public drainage ditch buffers study and the drainage work group recommendations. We have with us today Assistant Director of Bowser, Doug Thomas, and also Al Keen, Chief Engineer, also Dr. Shannon Fisher, Director of the Water Resources Center at Minnesota State University in Mankato, and also Dr. Harlan Madsen, Kandy Ohi County Commissioner. So if you would like to state your name for the record, please, and welcome to the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Thomas, Assistant Director, Board of Water and Soil Resources, and my right, Al Keen, and Dr. Shannon Fisher, and I'll let them introduce themselves again once we get to that. We're going to try to share the presentation today. You do have a copy of the PowerPoint that we're going to be working from, as well as a copy of the Drainage Work Group consensus recommendations that we'll be talking about in the second half of the presentation today. So basically, 2 years ago, the issue of ditch buffers started the discussion that we have had ongoing now for the last 2 years. Representative Rick Hansen had introduced some legislation regarding some concerns that some constituents and others had expressed to him, and that basically led to a discussion, led to a charge to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, working with a large group of stakeholders to initiate and undertake a study of the current status of ditch buffers in the state. Just simply to provide some background in terms of what is that requirement. And the requirement goes back to 1959 when the drainage law, it was a permissive authority for drainage authorities to establish grass buffer strips along the ditches. In 1977, that authority became a shall or a mandate. And basically, it's triggered by an action of the drainage authorities that requires the appointment of viewers. And so it'd be a new ditch, an improvement of a ditch, a major repair, or a redetermination of benefits and damages. So there's a trigger mechanism in statute which requires that. Some of the reasons for the grass buffer strip going back in history was reducing ditch bank erosion, slumping, and sedimentation, reducing maintenance costs by keeping tillage equipment and keeping activities away from it, and providing some protection of water quality. Basically, the 2005, the directive that we were given to is stated here, and it was simply to conduct an implementation assessment of public drainage buffers, their use, the maintenance and benefits of those. And as I said before, we were instructed to do that in consultation with farm groups, watershed districts, soil and water districts, counties, and a number of other conservation organizations, as well as our federal agency or federal partners here in the state. And actually, there was a study that was done back in 1987. So there was a predecessor to the 2005 buffer study that was completed by us at that point in time. And with that brief introduction, I would like to turn it over to Al Keen, and he's going to take us through the first parts of the buffer study, and then we're going to be switching again and having Dr. Shannon Fisher talk about the actual process and some of the mechanics and some of the results of that study. That study then basically led to some recommendations, which we'll mention about midpoint through the presentation, which really included a recommendation that this work group that was established continue to meet and continue to debate and discuss some issues that were brought forward and identified People felt that it provided a very unique mechanism. It was the first time, at least in my career, that we had all of the interested parties, the conservation organizations, the environmental groups, the drainage authorities, the farm organizations, you name it, sitting down at the same table talking about some of the issues that people had regarding some of the management of our public drainage systems in the state. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to turn it over to Al.
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Al Kane. I serve as the Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And as Doug indicated, that the directive then in 2005 from the legislature led to the production of this report called the Public Drainage Buffer Study. And in your packet of PowerPoint slides, note that there is a link to the Bowser website where that study is available electronically. Note also on the cover of this report that this was a joint effort. We had contracted with the Water Resource Center of Minnesota State University Mankato, as well as the Water Resource Center of the University of Minnesota, to help with preparation of this study. This slide just shows you the different sections that exist in the report. We won't go into real detail on all of those, but we'll try to give you a brief overview of each of them. And note section 6 then was the recommendations from the study work group. It was their decision to provide some consensus recommendations within this study and report. In section 1, one of the things that the drainage work group wanted to do, the study work group I should say, was to ensure that everyone had some base of knowledge of drainage in Minnesota and how it is variable across the state. And also some of the key definitions, because when we speak about public drainage ditches, many folks believe that it's totally owned, if you will, or controlled by a public entity, where in fact it's administered by a public entity in Minnesota. That's watershed districts or counties, and there's one WMO in the Twin Cities area that has one drainage ditch that they administer. But those systems are owned by the landowners that are benefited by the system, and also then all of the costs of maintaining that system are borne by those benefited landowners. Viewing is also a key word in understanding that some folks may not have great familiarity. Again, that is the definition of benefits and damages. We call them viewers in Minnesota. They're appointed to define those benefits and damages for drainage systems. Drainage is a critical in much of Minnesota for agricultural as well as for roads and cities. We'll show you a little bit of some diagrams in that regard, and recognizing that it does vary significantly across Minnesota because we do have a quite diverse landscape. This diagram is from the National Soil Tilth Laboratory, Iowa State University. And it shows the soils within the Midwest that benefit from improved drainage. The redder that the area is, the more it can benefit from drainage. And in fact, that's where we do find more of the drainage, both open ditches and subsurface tile. Section 2 and 3, I'd like to turn it over now to Dr. Shannon Fisher from Mankato State University.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Shannon Fisher. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota River Basin Joint Powers Board, and I'm also the Director of the Water Resources Center at Minnesota State University down in Mankato. As part of the support mechanism for this project, the Water Resources Center in Mankato assisted the Board of Water and Soil Resources in completing Sections 2 and 3 of the buffer study. In particular, we helped develop and refine the questionnaire that is found in the study, which was really focused in a mechanism to assess the implementation of required grass buffer strips along public drainage ditches to include one of the mandates, which was to assess the use and maintenance of these ditches. In addition, we also completed, or at least assisted with in a large degree, with Section 3, which was to utilize the GIS components that we had available to us to really take a good look at the conservation program lands and associated voluntary buffers along the public drainage ditches. Uh, The questionnaire itself consisted primarily of 14 questions developed by the Board of Water and Soil Resources. However, I want to emphasize that those questions were brought to the ditch work group on at least two occasions for input and revision. And we also worked through our own staff with expertise in conducting surveys to put this thing together. Focus was on the implementation of the Section 103E grass buffer strips, including the installation and the maintenance of those strips, in particular since 1986. We sent the survey, or the questionnaire, I should say, out to all of the counties and watershed districts in the state. We had very good response rates. Of the 87 counties, we had 81, I'm sorry, that's my mistake there on the 82. We had 81 of 87 counties return the survey, and we had 45 of 46 watershed districts respond as well. The value that our office was able to bring to getting some better improved responses on some of this was the fact that we had good relationships with some of the watershed districts through our efforts with the Minnesota River Board and our association with the Association of Minnesota Counties, and so we had a very good response. Responses were tabulated and analyzed by my staff at the Water Resources Center, and we had 21 watershed districts and approximately 80 counties that indicated that they do have some form or at least some level of jurisdiction over a portion of our public ditch system. Just to give you a few highlights on some of the results, Doug mentioned that we really wanted to take a look at this in conjunction with the 1987 study so that we could get a good feel for how the landscape may have changed, or at least the management of some of these ditches may have changed. In the 1987 study, we had a little over 15,000 miles of public ditch reported by the ditch authorities. In the 2006 study, we had a little over 17,000 miles reported. The miles of drainage ditch required to have grass strips in the 1987 study was reported at 1,155 as compared with 2,138 miles in the 2006 study. That's an increase of just a little over 5%. The miles of drainage ditch, however, with grass strips in place, we had 499 miles of the miles reported in the 1987 study, so approximately 43% of those ditches required to have grass buffer strips actually had them in place. And in the 2006 study, of the miles that were supposed to have grass buffer strips in place, 1,561 miles, or 72% of those required, were in fact in place. Now you'll see there's a notation that the range is 0 to 100%. What we wanted to indicate there is just the simple fact that this was highly variable depending on which ditch authority you were. Some ditch authorities had virtually none of their required grass strips in place, and others had done a very good job and had 100% of their grass strips in place. The number of enforcement actions has changed considerably since 1987. In the 1987 study, there were 10 district or drainage authority actions and one DNR action, and that was recorded since 1977. So between 1977 and 1987, there were only 11 reported ditch authority or ditch enforcement actions. In the 2006 study, this had increased to approximately 128 actions between 1986 and the 2006 study. So a number of these ditch authorities had taken a much more active and aggressive approach to getting these in place. I should note, though, that a fair number of these actions were concentrated within a few various ditch authorities. In Section 3 of the report, one of the important factors that we wanted to take a look at was not only where we had grass buffer strips in relation to the 103E requirements, but also where we were already protecting or buffering our ditch system with conservation program lands. And you'll see on the map that the black dots represent areas where we did identify some conservation acreage that is adjacent to a part of our public drainage ditch system. There are some real highly concentrated areas there. I can identify a few of those for you, one of them being in the Minnesota River Basin, largely due to the efforts there of the CREP program, along with a real aggressive CRP and CCRP program. but also in some of those areas where you see concentrations of these conservation lands, it really is a credit to the local staff who viewed this as a priority and made a real strong effort to get those lands in place. We took a look at the ditch miles that we had. We used the RIM shape files from the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We used the CRP shape files from the Farm Services Agency. And then my office had a number of various shape files that were built or digitized by our staff over the past 10 years. There are some overlap on some of these, and I just want to point out that in some of the federal shape files that we used to identify some of the conservation lands on this map, it became very difficult at times to separate out the CRP, the CCRP, and the CREP lands. And so we did the best that we could using the CREP information that we had from Bowser to split those out. But in the end, we had a real good summary, I think, of what we had to work with there. As a result then, just taking a look at the miles of land along our public drainage ditches that had some conservation lands in place, the best estimates that we could come up with, given the data that we had available to us, was that there are about 1,569 miles of our public drainage system that are adjacent, have CRP and CCRP adjacent to them. Now, I want to point out that this is not 1,569 miles where there is CRP or CCRP on both sides of the ditch. This is just, these are linear miles on each side. So if you had 1 mile of ditch that had CRP on both sides, that was 2 miles of CRP. The CREP acreage was about 122 miles. There was 96 additional miles of rim. So we did have about 1,787 miles of our public drainage ditch system buffered by conservation program lands. So with that, I'll turn it back to Al, I believe.
Thank you, Shannon. Section 4 of the buffer study was about the benefits of grass buffers along drainage ditches, for which we had contracted with the Water Resource Center at the University of Minnesota to do a literature review. They did a pretty extensive literature review, and in that process, they identified 4 general categories of benefits. Sediment and erosion control as one, water quality protection, another, ecological and habitat benefits of having grass strips along ditches, and economic benefits, partly as we talked about before, the reduced maintenance, which was one of the original intents, we believe. So if you care to look at that in more detail, the report on the bottom of our website has a pretty extensive bibliography of those referenced studies. Section 5 was one that was recommended by the study work group and Representative Hansen to look at the surrounding states in the Midwest and what they do, both in terms of requiring any kind of buffers along public drainage ditches, and also we looked at then the kind of programs available in those states to accomplish that. Voluntary buffers were available in almost all the Midwest states, CRP, CCRP, which is a federal program, of course, and most of the Midwest states do have some form of a conservation reserve enhancement program as well. Some of those help put buffers along drainage ditches. A note from the second bullet that Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan do not require buffers along public drainage ditches. However, Ohio does, quite similar to what Minnesota requires. They have a 4 to 15 foot grass berm required whenever a ditch work is done on a public system. Note also that they have a reduction in maintenance assessment for maintaining that by the landowner. Wisconsin has a somewhat similar requirement in terms of a 20 foot, what they call a drainage corridor. It's something that was passed, I believe, in the 1990s, and they're in the process of implementing that. It's not fully in place as well. Michigan, note, just does have an interesting drainage assessment based on runoff coefficient, of which buffers can sometimes help. Section 6, this is where the study work group consolidated their recommendations, and the bullets there note the general topics that were discussed by the study work group and for which there were general recommendations that were then followed up. So clarifying the point at the beginning for measuring required ditch buffers was one topic. We identified through the questionnaire to drainage authorities that there was quite a bit of diversity in how that requirement is being interpreted, how the existing law is being interpreted, and therefore the study work group believe we should follow up with additional discussions, see if there was something we could do to clarify. Enhancing the authority to establish and maintain the buffers, trying to provide potentially something for drainage authorities to put buffers where they are needed, particularly potentially looking at how to piggyback with conservation programs. Guidelines for drainage records modernization, a recognition that many of the records out there are quite old, and there's a need to bring them up to electronic standards, if you will, and this recommendation was to help advance that effort. The BMP manual, drainage system, best management practices, if you will, trying to provide potentially some additional information education in that regard. There was discussion also about further considering the regular reporting of drainage system efforts, maybe particularly in regard to buffers. And the recommendation from the study work group to continue to discuss these topics and provide then consensus recommendations to the legislature and others to advance those efforts. And I'll now turn it over to Doug Thomas again to walk you through what the drainage work group, which was then the subsequent body, proceeded to do to advance the recommendations in the study.
Okay, as Al indicated, the study and the report was delivered to the legislature last February at the conclusion of our effort, and as Al indicated in Section 6, the group really went on to say that, you know, they believed that there was significant value in continuing to meet and try to develop some recommendations around a number of those issues that were identified. They agreed to meet voluntarily. We met monthly starting in June of 2006 and concluded basically just a few weeks ago. Bowser facilitated that effort, and again, the idea was is to continue to address public drainage ditch buffer issues as well as other drainage topics, as you will see, that were brought forward by any member of the work group. And if there was agreement that we wanted to take on that issue, we proceeded to do that. They also agreed initially to develop a set of consensus recommendations, recognizing that the ditch law has been in place for many, many years, that any change does not come easy, and there's going to be people on both sides of the argument. And the group really felt that being proactive and trying to move forward in our in the evolution of looking at how we work with and deal with some of the drainage or some of the issues that people have brought forward was the best approach to use. Basically, just to give you a quick idea of who was on the drainage work group, a number of farm groups, environmental organizations, drainage authorities, a number of other associations that brought a lot of value to us. The Red River Watershed Management Board, because of some of the unique aspects of flood damage reduction that they deal with, that's directly tied to our public drainage system. We had folks from the Minnesota Association of Drainage Inspectors, county officers and viewers, those people that work with those systems day in and day out, and they came forward and participated. The state agencies that you see listed, and then a number of legislators and staff participated from time to time in the discussions. Again, kind of just to touch on why the need for a drainage work group, and again, we've already talked about the importance of agriculture or drainage in regards to not only agriculture but also to roads and cities. I think sometimes people don't understand or, you know, don't grasp that many of our ditches actually benefit municipalities, particularly in the rural parts of the state, where much of their stormwater and some of their infrastructure is supported, as well as many of our roads in the state, particularly in northwestern Minnesota, where many of those projects actually coincide right along each other. water quality. The group recognized that that's a growing and increasing priority, and certainly drainage ditches have been implicated in that through the growing list of impaired waters. Those segments of ditches that meet a certain threshold in terms of drainage area, and if they, through the testing that has been done by Pollution Control Agency or other organizations, fail to meet water quality standards, they can and do get placed on the state's impaired waters list. Certainly, the study indicated a renewed interest on the part of the legislature to look at public ditches and some of the issues revolving around those. Also, that drainage issues are very complex, in that, as we felt, we needed a broad-based process to reach consensus in order to change policy relating to the drainage law. Then also a recognition that the drainage infrastructure that we have does provide an opportunity for multi-purpose water management. And we, through the board, have had a couple experiences the last few years where we've been able to work proactively with some drainage authorities where they were looking at possibly doing an improvement project, but were able to change and modify that by bringing in and utilizing wetland restorations, providing some flood control, and taking off some of the burden on the existing system and not having to undertake a typical improvement to a ditch, building in some environmental components, some flood damage reduction components. And so I think we believe that there's opportunities for looking at some of these projects in the future kind of from a multi-purpose water management perspective. I'd mentioned before in terms of the impaired waters issue, this is just to illustrate, for example, in the Red River Basin, these are segments of streams and ditches that are on the 303D list, and we can quickly see that our public drainage system comes right side by side with those kinds of listed waters. Some of the work group discussions to date, and this is really the heart of what ultimately led to the set of consensus recommendations that we'll go over now in the remainder of my formal presentation to you today. Drainage records preservation and modernization, enhancing the authority. We found a number of impediments that were there to drainage authorities that wanted to proactively go out and try to promote the establishment of buffers along public drainage ditches. The issue that kind of started this all was clarifying that point of beginning for where you measure that required 16.5-foot buffer strip and then the width of that. We dealt with some buffer compliance enforcement and reporting issues, recognized that if there were policy changes, we were going to probably need to update the Minnesota Public Drainage Manual. And also that provides an opportunity to add a lot of information on best management practices that can be looked at and considered as part of a ditch project rather than just simply doing the minimum amount of work that's required currently by statute. Group acknowledged the importance of continuation of that work group and then talked about and discussed the idea of a state drainage assistance team where there would be a pool of individuals that would be available to go out and consult with and provide technical expertise on a number of different aspects to drainage authorities as they're contemplating new projects. The first one is record preservations and modernization. The work group recommendation was that Bowser should develop guidelines based on the experience of drainage authorities with record modernization and then recommended some state funding to be provided to drainage authorities to actually accelerate and undertake drainage records preservation and modernizations. Having that in that kind of a format provides a number of benefits. Primarily, one is having accurate records of knowing exactly what we have in the state and having that in a modern kind of electronic format. It aids in individuals that are looking at land or maybe contemplating purchases to know exactly what it is that is on the land in terms of encumbrances, location, responsibilities, and then also the whole issue of public notice to be able to provide a much easier way to provide all of those affected landowners efficiently notice on projects so that they're aware of what's happening, they have an opportunity to know about that, and an opportunity to participate in those very long and legalistic processes that we go through on projects that are initiated. Second recommendation area dealt with enhancing the authority to establish and maintain ditch buffers. And that really came, again, was a result of a number of people that felt there were a number of impediments. And probably the primary impediment that was identified was that when there's construction taking place, a new ditch, an improvement to a ditch, or a major repair, this just automatically gets built into the process. But that process of just a redetermination of benefits and damages, if you were going to simply say, we want to go out and work in a drainage area and we want to promote and establish buffers along a ditch because of maybe response to an impaired waters issue, response to sedimentation, or response to, you know, problems with, you know, that they're experiencing. In order to do that, the only way for the drainage authority to actually initiate that is through a redetermination of benefits and damages. We were told by some of the viewers and other folks that could be $100,000 to just initiate that process only for the purpose of establishing the buffer. They really viewed that as an impediment. And so one of the things we came up with was and are proposing is actually a new section in the drainage law that provides an incremental approach to a drainage authority to not have to go through the benefit determination, but simply utilize the process of going out and determining the damages of what it would cost to implement that 16.5-foot requirement, and then also allows them to pay for that out of the maintenance fund, and also adds the ability for them to do site inlet control structures, which are structural gully control structures along drainage ditches. It's important to recognize that not all water flows uniformly across the land and into the ditch. In many cases, it's concentrated and flows to it in one point, and these structural practices are actually very, very important as far as maintaining and keeping sediment out of those particular ditches and subsequently down to downstream receiving bodies. We're also recognizing some impediments there regarding to how the Farm Services Agency, which is a part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and how they are implementing some of their conservation reserve program policies. Found out that in some cases, different parts of the state, they're administering that differently, and we're actually working with the Farm Service Agencies right now to figure out and to come with some standard guidance that they will send out to all their offices at some point in the future to try to make sure that everybody is implementing those provisions similarly. And then lastly, another impediment that was discovered through the work group process was a number of county attorneys were interpreting the ditch authority's responsibility to go back and restore that grass cover after a repair, for example, was done, where you might actually, you might clean out and put some dirt or spoil back out on that land. And they were giving some interpretation saying, well, no, that's still considered cropland because it's in CRP. Therefore, we don't have a responsibility to reseed that area. And again, the proposals that we've come up with make it clear that that is a responsibility of the drainage authority to restore that cover when those lands are enrolled in federal and state conservation programs out there. Again, we don't want to make it a disadvantage to a landowner to enroll and take advantage of those federal programs. Because as Dr. Fisher indicated, we have a substantial number of ditch miles that are protected because of those voluntary programs that we have in the state. So basically, what we did, and I kind of covered this, was adding a new section called subdivision, which would be a new subdivision within 103E, enabling, again, drainage authorities to establish vegetative buffers and site inlet controls. And they, again, would have to go through due process. And also, it would enable timely piggybacking with conservation programs for that permanent right-of-way. There's opportunities right now under federal programs where they were able to say, we're going to go in and try to work those together where we'd encourage landowners to take advantage of the federal program or the state programs and then subsequently come along and pick up that permanent grass buffer strip easement out there. Takes advantage of kind of two things at one time rather than in waiting until that 15 years lapses or having some complicating factors because they didn't happen at the same time. And this is basically kind of goes back to where it all started, was a discussion about the point of beginning. And this is actually the diagram that was in the survey that we asked the drainage authorities to tell us, where do you pick that point of beginning when you go out there to establish a grass buffer strip when it's required is either new construction, again, an improvement, a major repair, or just that straight redetermination of benefits. The response back was very mixed. We had a number of authorities that said A, a number that said B, and a number that said C. So, in fact, there was some confusion and not a very uniform application of that point of beginning. The recommendation, and we spent many, many hours on this, it was probably a major point of virtually every meeting that we had. Maybe thought that it was one of the simplest things to agree to, but it actually was one of the most complicated because of the significance of it as it was viewed by both landowners, drainage authorities, and the organizations involved. And so basically what we did is the work group recommends changing the definition, which is now top edge of the channel, to the top edge of the constructed channel resulting from the proceeding. Using the words resulting from the proceeding clarifies where and when. It isn't something that took place back in 1920. It's the action that's taking place today. And then also in the case on the right-hand side of that is where you have the construction of the ditch, where you have a uniform side slope from the bottom of the ditch to the top of the spoil, that top edge is the point of beginning. And where you have a level spoil, which is an example on the left, it would start where that leveled spoil bank intersects with natural ground and the constructed channel. So we think that that provides much more clarity to drainage authorities, to inspectors and viewers and others that have to go out there and on a day-to-day basis make that determination. And then if it's questioned, it hopefully is much clearer to people that are saying, well, okay, was it done properly or not? And then on the width issue, we spent a lot of time on this, and the current law says 16.5 feet from the top edge of the ditch outward or to the top of the crown of the leveled spoil bank. And I always have to be careful because it's hard to say that after a few times. So using that example of if the top edge of the constructed channel on the right, the 16.5 feet would go out from that top point outward. And if there is a leveled spoil bank, and that typifies what's already in statute, where you'd start at that top of the constructed channel, you would go out 16.5 feet or to the top of the crown of the leveled spoil bank. And we're recommending that distinction is made for establishment, improvement, and repairs, where we're moving dirt, where that's well-defined and well-known and well-understood. The drainage work group on the issue of just where there's a redetermination of benefits and damages only, and again, there's no dirt being moved. That's simply going out there and figuring out maybe there's some new lands that were brought into the system and they're going, or the benefits, that amount of benefits determined in the original procedure is old, it's antiquated, it's outdated, and they want to update that. That's a procedure that also requires the buffer strip. And in that case, the work group is recommending that, again, if there's a continuous side slope, it would be 16.5 feet, as it indicates on the right from the top. And where you have an old level spoil, it would simply be 16.5 feet from the edge outward. And that addressed a number of issues in terms of a meandering line where that crown could be going back and forth. It could be 30 years old. It's virtually non-existent anymore, difficult to determine. And so it makes it very clear that if we're going to do just that redetermination of benefits, that this is the measurement that would be applied in that situation. Buffer compliance, enforcement, and reporting. There is general support for enhancing compliance and enforcement. There was some concern that existed about the need and cost and precedent of reporting to the state, and the work group did not actually have a recommendation dealing directly with reporting, but they did recommend that the law be modified to require that that required inspection be done at a minimum of every 5 years. And that's the change, is every 5 years. Prior to that, the law just said that ditches shall be inspected. And so the change is basically that that would be an inspection of a public drainage ditch would be required once every 5 years. And if there was a violation of the grass buffer strip that was found, that inspection would have to be done annually and until 1 year after the violation is corrected. So really taking a much more aggressive approach to making sure that those grass buffer strips, where they're required, are in fact out there on the landscape. And as I mentioned before, the work group recommended that if we make these clarifications and they were adopted by the legislature, we should be updating the Minnesota Public Drainage Manual, which is basically the guidebook. It's the standards that drainage authorities use to help them find their way through drainage proceedings. And then the last recommendation is the work group is recommending that group should continue and that Bowser should facilitate this work, and that would provide an opportunity to continue to take on and to discuss a number of issues brought forward. And some of the, let's see, again, just some of the purposes of that. And then just to wrap up with the drainage assistance team, the idea behind that would be to create and fund a technical team that would be able to coordinate the expertise of agencies in the University of Minnesota, coordinate access to program funding, provide coordinated technical assistance, and looking at being able to identify alternatives, designs, and construction that are out there but aren't typically looked at because the law doesn't direct people to look at a lot of those alternatives. So to be proactive, to be upfront, and provide that assistance as drainage authorities are contemplating moving forward on a project. And then lastly, to provide information and education to drainage authorities on drainage management options on an ongoing basis. As I mentioned, some of the future topics that the work group has put on the table and has agreed that they're willing to take a stab at them. We didn't have time to do it in the last year, but looking at some issues that relate to impounding, rerouting, or diverting drainage systems, particularly where we're trying to develop wetland restoration projects in those types of settings. How do you remove property from a drainage system if it's no longer benefiting, and also if it's going to be converted to a different use? Again, somebody, for example, is going to do a wetland restoration, and that also has some bearing on some of the state-owned lands in terms of how do you look at doing that. The law, as somebody suggested earlier, is not very well suited to having a more streamlined process for doing that. Looking at partial abandonment, looking at the issue of urban ditches, where we have ditches in the state where basically the land use has gone from primarily agriculture to now primarily urban and residential, commercial. How do we want to try to look at those? Looking at the issue further of native vegetation as part of that seeding and grass buffer strip requirement, and then being able to adjust ditch assessments for land use changes. And again, the process right now is you have to do the whole system rather than being able to incrementally take on parcels. For example, somebody builds a gas station, you know, at the intersection of two roads, there's no way to increase the assessment because of additional runoff. And conversely, if somebody were to put their land into a perpetual conservation easement and change the land use from one of row crop to one of wetland and prairie, there's no simple way for us to provide a reduction in the assessment to that particular property owner. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Harlan Madsen. And as we indicated earlier, I'll do the introduction for Harlan. A farmer, a Kandy, Ojai County Commissioner, and a past president of the Association of Minnesota Counties.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. And Representative Wagenius has a question.
If you don't mind, I would like to just backtrack a little here. I noticed in your drainage manual that you're going to do, I think it's a great idea, but then look at some of the things you are planning to discuss later, mm-hmm. which, of course, won't get into the drainage manual. And my particular concern is the fact that you haven't discussed native vegetation, and the way I read the statute now, that folks can plant permanent grass other than a noxious weed means they can plant reed canary grass. I mean, that's what the statute currently says. And so I'm very concerned about that language, and I'm also concerned about the language that says a permanent strip of perennial vegetation approved by the drainage authority. We haven't seen a list of approved species to be planted, and again, we've heard so much discussion recently about native species being able to take up so much water. And when I had the opportunity, my concern really comes down to when I had the opportunity to visit with you all in Representative Hansen's absence, and folks were talking about planting brome along ditches. And I kept thinking about that brome and its very, very shallow root system. And I worry that that is still the recommended planting.
Mr. Thomas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lagunias, we did, have that discussion and continued that discussion after the meeting that you were in attendance at. And I think it's, one is perennial vegetation is a change that is being recommended. Previously it just said grass strip, which allows drainage authorities to look at and recommend something other than brome, as you suggest. That environment there is a very difficult environment where that grass strip is being implemented in some cases because of the maintenance, the spraying. It's kind of like road ditches in the state. It's something that we need to set a goal to get there. We can help do that by defining what perennial vegetation is, by identifying that it is not some of the non-native types of species. We're establishing a strip. It can take 3 to 5 years for establishment. And there's a whole host of questions that brought up. You heard many of those. And again, we feel that if a continuation of the work group is there, we can continue to wrestle with that, continue to bring back ideas, as we look at maybe further incremental changes. And the answer on the manual, it would go from a paper to an electronic version, which would allow us to make changes to that drainage manual as additional information is either agreed to, technologies come forward, some of the work that the university is doing in terms of two-stage channel design and a number of things like that, can be added on a regular basis rather than having to wait and undertake a major publication of a document, that's 3 inches thick.
Representative Lagunias.
Thank you. If I could just follow up. You've now given me additional cause for concern when you're talking about the need for maintenance and spraying. Of course, one of the reasons we want grass along the ditches that doesn't need to be sprayed, because we don't want the spray to get in the water and to get in the rivers and to get in our impaired waters. So it seems to me like the old practice is old. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Guineas, certainly recognize that. Again, it's changing a lot of practices that have evolved for many, many years in terms of how drainage authorities, work with those landowners and implement those projects. Right now, the drainage work group felt that it would be too large a step forward to simply say we're going to mandate this. Let's continue to look at some of the issues that people have talked about, much like we've done throughout this whole process, to dispel some of those myths, to bring in people to have that discussion, and then ultimately come back where there is consensus by all the groups that are at the table on what is, the right course of action, and maybe it will result in a more formal acknowledgement of the actual vegetation that would get, you know, that would be required to be established.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I think you're taking too much of a leap to say that it's only the way it is now and mandating natives. That's not necessarily, not that necessarily black and white. You could say the current language, maybe a little tighter than saying other than a noxious weed, that is really pretty bad. Mm-hmm. But you could say preferably Minnesota natives of a local ecotype. So that you're even at least aware, raising the awareness of people that that's the preference. But to keep with this old language and to do your $300,000 project to rewrite seems, well, I won't say what it seems. I just raised that as an issue.
Mr. Tom?
Here, just and as we move forward in speaking with Representative Hansen, it would appear that a bill will be introduced, you know, next week, and we can continue that. Certainly defining, you know, there's an opportunity to look at the definition of perennial vegetation, you know, as we look at the changes that are being proposed, and, you know, happy to continue to work with folks to try to provide something that kind of gets, you know, again, keeps us moving in the right direction. I think certainly there's a lot of agreement that, you know, the use of native vegetation, you know, has a lot of advantages, and how do we get there?
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm in a suburban district that is ditchless, and so I'm getting up to speed on this, and I'm seeing things that are sort of in bold and underlined in a few ways in a modest way. It gives me the impression that some people will say, ah, here's a big change, and I couldn't tell you whether it really is or not. Just how hot a topic in the areas where these ditches are, is this? Is this something that is going to rip the fabric of rural communities somewhere, or are there... I'm just trying to determine how easy this is going to be here.
Mr. Thomas?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, I think that the answer to that lies in the work of the work group. We've been at this for 2 years, and having the farm organizations... the environmental organizations, we're bringing, you know, the work group feels they're bringing forward a set of consensus recommendations that folks have reached agreement on that gets us moving in the right direction on a lot of these things. It gets rid of some of the impediments, provides some additional enhanced authority so that drainage authorities can go out more proactively, establish grass buffer strips without having to go through some of the added cost and procedural things that they would currently today, and then as well as providing a lot more education and technical assistance to them. So, you know, as the recommendations are coming forward, we have consensus amongst a broad coalition of entities, and, you know, I can't speak for, you know, what will happen, you know, once... you actually have a bill in front of you, but, you know, we feel very good that the group is together on this and that these are not changes that are so sweeping that people will have, you know, a visceral reaction to it. They are approaches that, again, get us moving forward, and they're not approaches where you're going to have, you know, people coming to the table saying we're absolutely opposed for reasons on either side of the spectrum.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just as a follow-up, I'm just sort of trying to make sure we're not going to have a Representative Olson talking about giving up sovereignty of our ditches or anything on the floor.
I'd like to do more at all times.
But I guess I'm curious, not coming from an area where this takes place. You're trying to find out ways to give incentives and break down barriers to private landowners to create ditch buffers for all the reasons that we know that they are good for the environment, among other things, and water quality.
Mr. Thomas?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Mr. Madsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As Doug stated, I'm Harlan Madsen, a county commissioner from Candy High County, starting my fourth term. I began with the drainage work group when I was the president of AMC 2 years ago, and now am moved into the past, has been president at that point in time. I want to emphasize to you, members of the committee, that I'm an active farmer. My son and I operate a 100-cow dairy operation in southeastern Candy High County and farm about 1,200 acres. I have 7 miles of ditch buffers on every public and private ditch that we have on our property. Why do they do that? Number one, it's the right thing to do. Number two, I cannot advocate and or require as a member of Ditch Authority something that I do not personally believe and personally do not do myself. Two-thirds of the miles of ditch buffer that I have, I put in 1989 and beginning in the 90s. I did it when rent was really cheap. And I say that somewhat facetiously, but somewhat matter of fact to you, is that one of the, as Mr. Thomas pointed out, one of the considerations that we had and discussions we had were trying to bring in line and synchronize the various state, federal, and local programs to enhance and to encourage people to establish buffers. I put mine in when rent was $75 an acre. Now it's almost triple that. I did, alongside of tar roads. And I will say this to you, and I've said this at a public meeting, and I will continue to say it. From an agricultural standpoint, if you're going to do something good, do it alongside a road. If you're going to do something stupid, do it at least a quarter mile back from the road. Because it will be noticed one way or the other. Now, I say that very honestly because I know for all the reasons of having the buffers, one of the topics that we talked about as the drainage work group. There were multiple issues that were brought forth, and they are somewhat alluded to in this particular document and in the more extensive document that Mr. Thomas has pointed is online. The matter of fact is that I'd like to do three things just very briefly. Number one, to try to summarize a little bit of what the work group dynamics were like. Many of the work group is present in this room right now for they have attended very faithfully for the last 2 years. Our work group has been rather fluid, rather amoebic. It has changed to meet the needs and discussion and so forth. I will tell you what happened the first 1, 2, and 3 meetings that we met as a group. If you walked in that particular group, you could tell exactly who was going to be there because the farm groups were here, the regulatory groups were here, the agency people were here, the attorneys were here, the environmental groups were here. Everybody segmented. As we began to build those relationships and build that understanding and build that trust, we then now meshed and melded all over the place. And the last meetings, during the breaks and during the Q&A and the discussions, we were all over the place. We were talking, we were interacting. Drainage is a very personal, a very controversial, a very convoluted topic in many situations. And with the skills, and I compliment Doug and Al, and I compliment those of you that had anything to do with mandating or encouraging Bowser to be the facilitators, they did a marvelous job. The rest of us had to learn and had to trust and had to develop. We all learned significant amounts. And what we learned was this. Minnesota is a very diverse state, as you all know. There is no one rule that will fit everybody. In fact, I would say to Representative Wagenius, bone grass is the damn toughest thing in the world to kill. It's one of the best things you can have as far as soil erosion. Does it meet some of the water absorption? No. Does it hold soil out of there? Does it hold the grass and the dirt? You bet it does. And I would honestly, very, very respectfully ask each of us and each of you and each of our regulatory, when we put together these lists, that we are cognizant of the tremendous diversity. We are focusing on what do we want for an outcome? What do we want for an outcome? Do we want better water quality? Yes. Do we want less soil moved? Yes. Do we want to have the environment encouraged and enhanced? Yes. Do we want less ditch maintenance? Yes. All of those things are. So focus on the outcome, focus on the goal, and we'll figure out a way to get there. And it will be very diverse. it will be very specific to that particular area. Give the ditch authorities, empower them, encourage them, give them the enhancements, make the requirements. We'll do that. We will do that as ditch authorities. As long as we have the clarifications that are there, as long as we have the statutes that are there, as long as we have the will to do so, we will make those things happen. It is impossible. It is impossible for us to have done. In fact, as Mr. Thomas pointed out, the chart that had A, B, C, and D on there, everybody had different interpretations. The sad thing is, every interpretation was correct. Every single interpretation was correct, and nobody made the wrong decision. But we had very confusing and very conflicting points in clarifying the points at the beginning. That was a major step. Took a lot of work to get to that point because of the different fixes that are in there. We want to be proactive. We need the clarification. We need the local flexibility. We need the collaboration. It is truly, in my opinion, as a member of the Ditch Authority and as a farmer, it is truly a step in the right direction that we are making some incremental changes in there. And Representative Gardner, it will not tear the fabric of rural Minnesota apart. It will create questions. And what I implore upon you as a committee is focus on this issue very specifically and very narrowly. Let us, as a state, move ahead in increments. We aren't going to bite the whole apple in one complete chunk. We're going to take bits and pieces of it. We're going to accomplish very, very positive and very proactive things as we move ahead. I want to personally thank Representative Hansen for his initiative and for bringing to light some of the issues that are there and for carrying the bill as we move ahead. And at this point, I want to thank you for the opportunity to have attended the drainage work group, and thank you for this opportunity to appear this evening. And if there's any questions, I would certainly be happy to address. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Madsen. Any questions for Mr. Madsen? Okay, well, thank you very much. Well said, and thank you all for the work that you put in. I know that there have been countless hours put in on this. So, Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't have any questions for Mr. Madsen, but I did of the other testifiers, or maybe Representative Hansen. I'm wondering why we had to do this study. I mean, is this and I talked to Representative Hansen a little bit about this last year. Is the issue that farmers are plowing and tilling soil too close to the ditch and they're not paying attention to the law that we currently have?
Mr. Thomas?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, I think the study did a number of things, and it probably was a good starting point. It was a good way to bring an awareness back to this issue, and as you in the report, we've got about statewide 72% compliance. That brought the issue of compliance and enforcement to the forefront. Work group talked about it. Again, one of the recommendations is to beef up the requirement in statute that every ditch is inspected at least once every 5 years so that we don't go 10, 15, or 20 years without having an inspection done and knowing whether or not that farmer has encroached on that. And that issue of encroachment or violation of the buffer strip is also one that you just simply have to recognize. If you get a new renter, renter might come out there, may not exactly understand what that buffer was, might farm a little bit closer. There's many different reasons why that encroachment or, that buffer strip may have been, destroyed over the course of a period of time. Typically, where you have the same landowner year in, year out, they're going to know what that is and do that. So it's brought, again, an awareness to it, and it's brought a response back from the work group with a change that we think gets us to the point where the drainage authorities are being, going to be more actively out there during their inspections and finding those violations when they occur and correcting those violations in a timely manner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if that was an answer to my question. I asked why this is here, not what the group came up with. And that's what I want to know. You said there's 70% compliance out there now, that it's already that farmers are already paying attention to the law, and the different authorities are making sure that they're complying with that. I think that's what you said. So I'm not sure why we had to do this study. I think what the issue is that these authorities aren't enforcing the law, or they're not paying attention to what they're supposed to be paying attention to. Now, from what I see in your recommendations for the law here, the way I read this, it looks like it's going to be much more restrictive. Why can't we just tell these authorities, pay attention to the current law that we have, and let's make sure that this setback is taking place? Why do we have to have studies? Why do we have to create new laws in order to make people comply with current law? That's what I don't understand.
Mr. Thomas.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, again, the purpose of the study, I think, goes back to a bill introduced 2 years ago, a lot of controversy around that bill, and, you know, the resolution was, let's find out just how much of a problem it is out there. You know, is it 10%? Is it 50%? Is it 72%? As, you know, we discovered in terms of compliance with when the buffer's required, are they there? That's the purpose, or that's why the study was done. I think one of the benefits that came out of this study was the work group, which a lot of the people brought some various issues to the table. Environmental groups brought some concerns. The drainage authorities brought issues where they're saying, you know what, there's some impediments to us wanting to do better out here. We're getting different interpretations from different county attorneys. The interesting thing about the ditch law is that at the end of the day, the responsibility for it lies with the county or the watershed district and their attorney. There is no state oversight agency where somebody can say, this is something we've got, how do we resolve this? That does not exist in the framework of the drainage law. It basically is implemented, you know, drainage authority by drainage authority, ditch by ditch, and we found a number of things that caused some concern, like different interpretations by county attorneys from one county to the other. So those were, I think, the positive things that came forward that really help us provide those drainage authorities with those tools, with clarification on how do you, like you say, how do you go out and define that point to beginning where you say, okay, now that we know that, now we know where you measure that 16 and a half feet from. Those, I think, in my mind and I think in the mind of the drainage work group, some very positive things that help make it much more efficient and make it much clearer as to implementing that requirement out there.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
yep. Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Anywhere in this new language, is it going to specify who's going to pay to repair the damage that's out there now? And is it going to be the farmer? Is it going to be the county, the authority? Who's going to pay? Any, are there some fines connected with this? Is it going to be in state statute that there's going to be a particular fine against the farmer for plowing or tilling too close to a ditch? Any of those kinds of things been addressed?
Mr. Thomas.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, in the ditch law, there's actually a very lengthy procedure for when violations of the buffer strip are found, including the requirement or the ability for the drainage authority to go out, have somebody redo the buffer strip, and then assess the landowner back for that cost. So there is mechanisms to enforce it once that violation is found to be occurring. In addition to that, there's actually another provision in the drainage law, in the ditch law, which actually allows the drainage authority to provide an increased assessment because of failure to implement that or somebody causing excessive sedimentation. So there are remedies in the drainage law that allow for that recovery of cost to go out there where the drainage authority says, we got a violation, we're going to hire, you know, we've informed the landowner, they have not done the work at their own cost. They come in, hire a contractor, hire somebody else, they go out and reseed it, and then they are able to recover the cost.
So, Mr. Chairman, so those things are current law that you're talking about right now. And it'd be interesting to find out how many times that has been used to bring people into compliance. Do you know that answer to that question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, the closest I can come to that is, again, the information that was collected during the study, which said since the 87 to the current one, there was 128 enforcement actions taken by drainage authorities that they reported back to us. So, you know, some of them are, in fact, utilizing that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really don't see any reason why we need to have this. It sounds like we've got everything in place that we need. It's just going to make it even more restrictive. It sounds to me like we're doing a good job from everything I hear here. I don't know why this is even here. It doesn't make sense to me.
Mr. Chairman, may I address, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Hackbarth, one of the, I think, important points to note, please, is that one of the challenges that we had as a ditch authority, and Mr. Thomas pointed it out very appropriately, the 87 counties with different county attorneys and then the multiple watershed districts each having the final interpretation. And I would direct your attention, I can't remember what slide it is exactly, that shows the point of beginning as far as the buffer strip, the A, B, C, and D items on there. And again, I want to repeat, members of the committee, that each interpretation is really correct. What we have done, I believe, clearly in the recommendations coming from the drainage work group, is to clarify where that buffer strip starts so that we would avoid confusion about the future buffers, because some of the ditches, the buffer strip would start, and you may have a buffer strip all the way down the side of the ditch. The perception of the public is that the buffer or the green would start from the top of the ditch and go out, when in reality, according to the interpretation of the county attorney or the watershed district attorney, there may be fully in compliance on that ditch as it states right now, and you may not see any grass going landward on that particular farmer's property. And they may be farming as I might be farming right next to the ditch, and according to the ditch authority attorney, they would be perfectly legal. But the perception would be that maybe as a farmer, I'm then farming too close because there's no grass going out. But again, according to the interpretation and the flexibility within the statute, I might be very perfectly legal.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Matheson, Commissioner Matheson, I think if that's what we're trying to get at and if that's what we want to fix, then let's fix that, but there's a lot more in the bill than that.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hackbarth, Representative Hackbarth. There's a lot of things in there that we found as a drainage work group that I believe I speak for the work group at this point in time, that we're looking at consensus and we're looking at improvements and being proactive in helping solve and reduce some of the impediments to drainage authorities doing their job. The reality is very, very few. There are instances, but very few of the buffer strips are encroached upon by agriculture producers. Because prior to 1977, there was no requirement in statute that the buffer strips be included. It was only as part of the proceeding at that point in time. And since 1977, there have been less than a handful of new or improved ditches in the state of Minnesota. Very, very few. Most of those are in the early 1900s and 1920s and 30s. And at that point, there was no requirement. So the perception of the public is very important here, that most of our ditches are not being violated by producers as myself. Most of them are complying with the law. What we're trying to do is to enhance and encourage and support and collaborate efforts so that we do the buffer strips. It is somewhat misleading that this study is only focusing on buffer strips, because that was, while it was the rallying point for the group to start, it really was the jumping off to doing some other, I think, very good work in getting us into topics and essentially looking at topics that are not going to go away. Right? They are going to get more complicated. So if to close, these are issues that are, we feel, very good improvements. There are changes in the statute that are requested, are going to be requested. There is some funding going to be requested. We're requesting to continue to meet, because as we continue to meet, we develop, we maintain, we continue the relationships, we look at ways to improve and to collaborate to make good successes in the state of Minnesota, and I think that's the positive outcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Matheson. So, any further questions? We do have one more thing on the agenda. Okay, thank you again. We have a report on House File 74, Representative Hansen's bill from the Game, Fish, and Forestry Division. And at this point, I would like to move the adoption of the division report. And Representative Dill, if you'd like to speak to the report.
No comment, except we took testimony on the bill, both people for and against the bill. I believe there was maybe one vote in committee that was against the bill at final adoption and referral to your committee, and recommend that the report was to go to the general register from this committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dill. With that, I'll renew my motion to adopt the division report on House File 74. Is there any further discussion on that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion prevails. And at this point, I will move that House File 74, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass. And this again is Representative Hansen's bill, a resolution to Congress. Are there any questions or comments? If there are no questions, or anyone from the public would like to speak or ask any questions? Okay. Hearing no questions, I move that House File 74 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. House File 74 recommended to pass and sent to the general register. Next week, we will be on Tuesday hearing from the DNR on the Working Lands Initiative. We will also be hearing House File 415, Representative Poppe's bill, dealing with noise standards and exemptions, dealing with racetracks. On Thursday of next week, we'll be hearing presentations from the Minnesota Environmental Coalition of Labor and Industry, and also the Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment. And they're going to be discussing the topics of what's being done to address the global climate change issues currently in industry, also talking about carbon sequestration and things that we can be moving forward on. Those will be individuals from the University of Minnesota. It'll include Dr. Tillman, who we saw at the presentation in the full House chambers with our joint committees. So we will, at this point, adjourn until then. Thank you.